Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Senator, it's an honor to have you here this morning. I know you're busy. Thank you for giving us your time.
Wonderful to be with you as always. And hopefully heading back to Connecticut.
Okay, we look forward to it. The COVID-19 relief package headed to the House of Representatives, and the president wants to sign it. The governor worries that the money will not be allotted fairly. New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, they're just some of the hardest hit places and need to be prioritized over most other states. Does it sound like that will happen?
We're going to be fighting for Connecticut, which is near the epicenter, New York, of the coronavirus crisis in this country. But make no mistake, this bipartisan agreement and the bill passed last night is a massive down payment, but by no means the end of what we need to do. It is not a panacea. It offers powerful remedies for recovery. We need to act urgently, but we also need to do more in future packages to provide aid for state and local governments, also more support for a Marshall Plan that provides the kinds of supplies, masks, protective gear, ventilators that are necessary to meet this crisis, along with additional beds, and also more aid for small businesses as well as workers. The whole point of this package is to put cash in hands of workers, families, small businesses, and make sure that our state and local governments are treated fairly. But we're going to continue this fight.
And we know that, Senator, nonprofits here in Connecticut, they're asking people actually to call on you and Senator Chris Murphy to get funds in place for places like Beardsley Zoo, which they don't get any state funding. So they've actually requested $1 billion for the Institute for Museums and Library Science, and that would include nonprofit programs like Beardsley Zoo. Is that a possibility? And if not, what is being done to help out the nonprofits?
There is aid for nonprofits in this package. As a matter of fact, just as small businesses can take loans that would be forgiven if they keep people on their payrolls, so too nonprofits, 501c3s, 501c4s, the domestic violence groups, homeless shelters, all kinds of other nonprofits, including potentially museums, would be eligible for this kind of aid. And the point is, they employ people, they provide a cultural and social net, and they are essential to our quality of life.
Okay, and Senator, if this relief package does go through, which it will, how soon can Americans get their checks in their mail?
I hope it will go through the House. That's the next step, and then the president signing it. And if that happens this week, as is certainly possible, the Secretary of the Treasury says that within about 3 weeks, people will see checks in their bank accounts. It can be deposited directly through electronic transfer, $1,200 per person, $2,400 per family, as long as they make up to $75,000. And then above that amount, it is smaller phased out amounts. But equally important is the addition to the unemployment compensation. I call it unemployment compensation on steroids because it extends the amount and vastly increases what they can receive up to almost their full pay, or maybe they're absolutely their full pay for a lot of people. And that means, again, cash in the hands of families and workers. That's our priority.
And Senator Blumenthal, one last question before we let you go. We know that the president has been he's voiced his opinion very strongly about trying to get people back to work as soon as possible, understandably so, because our economy is getting hit, obviously, horribly, and it makes complete sense. But from your opinion, what is kind of the likelihood of getting people back to work? We know the stock market has been destroyed. And like I said, this is obviously impacting businesses here and across the country. But what is the likelihood that we actually can get people back to work at this point relatively soon?
The stock market, just as a parenthetical, actually rose dramatically in the last 2 days with the prospect of this relief plan. But make no mistake, this bold and big initiative has to be followed by more steps, which are necessary to put people back to work, to enable struggling businesses to continue. I've held teleconferences, calls, conferences with small businesses across the state, as many as 150 yesterday in the New Haven area by teleconference. I am hearing how people are hurting, not just the small businesses, but also those nonprofits mentioned, because they are serving the most vulnerable, many of them victims and survivors of domestic violence, homeless people, the children of our state. And we need to act with fierce urgency, because Americans' lives are on the line, and we need to heal the health emergency in order to heal the economic emergency. If we fail at meeting that health emergency, the economy simply won't recover. So we need that medical surge that this relief plan will enable.
Senator Blumenthal, you cleared up quite a few questions this morning. We thank you so much for taking a few minutes, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Talk to you then. Thank you.
Tony and Melissa in the morning on WICC 600, sponsored by Selco Heating and Air Conditioning.
We continue our coverage here on WICC on the coronavirus crisis. And don't forget, we have all the information here. You can go to our website at WICC600.com. We have information over there. And joining us this morning is Dr. Pearl from Connecticut Ears, Nose, and Throat in Trumbull. Dr. Pearl, it's nice to have you here today. How are you, sir?
I'm great. Thanks, Tony Moser, for having me on your show this morning.
Absolutely. First question, how has the COVID-19 outbreak impacted your offices and keeping patients safe and your staff safe? How is all that working out?
It definitely has impacted us, just like it has all my colleagues in the area, especially in the hospitals, especially. For us personally, we've had a decrease in patients that are coming in to see us because everybody wants to reduce their exposure. We've spread out appointments to keep our waiting areas empty, to keep that social distancing. We've gotten rid of magazines in our office so people don't cross-contaminate. We've got wipes and Purell all over the office as well.
Wow. And we know that yesterday we were reading a bunch of articles. We heard it on a couple other stations, including USA Today, talking about a new symptom of COVID-19 seems to be losing your sense of smell and taste. Do you know why that is? That's pretty odd. And all of a sudden, that just came to fruition a few days ago, it seems like.
That's right. So it was a report that came out of the UK where they were seeing that patients, approximately 30% of patients were reporting a loss of sense of smell. And these were patients that were pretty much asymptomatic. There were patients also that had COVID-19, but a lot of patients there were asymptomatic. Typically during a flu season, we will see patients who come in complaining of loss of sense of smell. It's typically just short-lived, like any other cold, lasts about 5 days, and then it clears up. But probably about 15% of patients after just the routine flu will have this post-viral loss of sense of smell, which we call anosmia. They also report of a change in taste, which was shown in this study as dysgeusia. And people lose their sense of taste mainly because it's really a loss of sense of smell. When you eat, food particles are broken up. The odors are released into the back of the mouth, which go up into the back of the nose to reach the nerve endings for sense of smell, which are olfactory nerves. And after a flu, about 15% of people will report having a loss of sense of smell that's not just the five-day term. It lasts much longer. It could actually last 6 to 12 months. So it's not abnormal for us to see these types of patients. What's different is the amount of patients. So it's at least twice as many patients are having it. They're not the older patients where we typically see it. They tend to be younger. And what's more of a concern for us to look into further is they're asymptomatic. So the coronavirus, which has been around, has frequently caused change of sense of smell. But the COVID-19 is a little different. And we're not sure. These are all anecdotal reports that are coming in from Europe, from Italy, Germany, and such. And it's definitely information that we need to gather and make assessments on.
But this isn't something to fool around with. I mean, if you have lost your sense of smell or taste, you got to get to a doctor right away.
Yes, but we also don't want to panic everybody, because, again, we see it all season long. We'll see patients. I saw a young child yesterday who came in, and for this person, he had a history of recent concussions from playing hockey, but he also had uncontrolled allergies, which I think was most likely the cause of his symptoms.
Mm.
There's many different reasons that people lose their sense of smell, whether it's just the common cold, you have allergies, sinus problems, head trauma, Alzheimer's disease, people that smoke. We see a lot of people work exposure from either chemicals or such that they're exposed to at work that will also affect their sense of smell. So we definitely don't want to panic people that anybody who loses their sense of smell needs to be come in right away, because as you know already, our health system's overwhelmed by the COVID-19 crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we're talking to Dr. Pearl with Connecticut Ears, Nose, and Throat in Trumbull. Something I was talking to Tony about just before you came on, Doctor, was the fact that because this symptom has now been discovered, like you said, this is pretty new information. It came over from the UK. I have to imagine, though, does this impact you allowing patients to come in, debating whether they've contracted the virus or they haven't? Like you said, our healthcare system right now is overloaded with patients and people who are actually in some ways kind of looking for those symptoms to see, well, am I infected with this? And I have to imagine now that these are common symptoms that you'd have with a head cold, like you said, allergies, the influenza, COVID-19, unfortunately losing your sense of smell and taste, that could be a whole number of different things. So how do you proactively allow, I guess, patients to come in, and you're, again, keeping people safe coming in and also your staff?
Right. So, you know, our patients mean a lot to us, as well as our staff, and as we have our doors open now because we want our patients to have access to us, we're following the guidelines of the American Academy of Otolaryngology, in which we're trying to screen patients ahead of time. So if they have any exposure or symptoms of COVID-19, we're not handled in our office to do any testing, so we don't want them coming in. We want to see the patients that have sort of the time-sensitive ENT problems, infections, nosebleeds, hearing loss, that really need to be seen. If someone has a sense of smell change, you know, ideal world would be to test everybody, test them all, but we're limited on who we can test. So one of the best recommendations is if you have this loss of sense of smell, you can self-isolate, which is sort of what everybody's doing anyway, and keep yourself away from people for 14 days. Now, that's not a definitive recommendation. It's just a suggestion of what people can do until we can test everybody.
Dr. Pearl, we thank you for taking a few minutes. That's Dr. Pearl from Connecticut Ears, Nose, and Throat in Trumbull. If people want more information on you and your staff, what can they do? Is there a website they can go to?
Yes, our website is entdoctorsct.com, and they can get information, or they can call our office at 203-452-7081. The other thing, if I can just say, Connecticut has the 211 website, 211ct.org. They're looking for donations for people that have N95 masks. The hospital's definitely running into short supply as they predict what's going to be happening. So donations are greatly appreciated.
All right, sounds good. Dr. Pearl, thank you so much for taking a few moments here on WICC 600.
Tony and Melissa in the morning on WICC 600, sponsored by Selco Heating and Air Conditioning.
Okay, we've got 740 Tony and Melissa in the morning. Joining us here now is Melissa's father, actually, Alan Sheketoff. He's an insurance broker and owner of MacMan Insurance Associates in Fairfield. Mr. Sheketoff, it's an honor to have you here this morning. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're doing okay. We're hanging in there. We've had listeners who are trying to take advantage of this open enrollment until April 2nd, but they're finding you can't sign up for insurance online. You must talk to an agent over the phone. But that means seems to be proving to be a major problem as well. What are you finding there in your business?
You're 100% correct. it's very much like it used to be back in November and December when the original open enrollment period began. And thank God it's ended. But needless to say, this is a very unique situation, which obviously you or I or anyone else has never lived through before. And they're kind of making rules on the fly, and they came up with this only about a week ago and decided that it would be a good idea to that a lot of people obviously are going to be affected by this. Many people are going to lose their jobs. Of course, with that, many will lose their insurance as well. So they wanted to give them opportunities anyway to, and I'll deal with your first question, go through the exchange, Access Health, if they wanted to get some type of individual coverage as a what we call a special enrollment period. So they don't need a legitimate what we call qualifying event. They could actually come onto a plan now. But you hit it on the button. Getting onto the plan and getting enrolled is a little bit more of a challenge because typical of our state, they probably didn't hire enough people to handle this because it happened so quickly. They were not prepared to deal with, I think, thousands of people that all need this opportunity now.
So, Dad, essentially, even though this open enrollment's open till April 2nd, which we're closing in on that in the next week, there's still probably a lot of people who are not going to be able to take advantage of it. And it's not because they're not acting quick enough. There's just not the resources for them to enroll, it sounds like.
Not so much the resources. Tony hit it right in the beginning. You can't just go online like you used to do as one way to enroll. You also can't, unfortunately, call a broker like myself or your husband or our son that could help somebody go through this process. We can try and help them by determining what plans might make the most sense based on their needs. But ultimately, to enroll into the plan, the only way they're allowing this special period to enroll is you have to literally call Access Health, and one of their enrollers will actually put you onto whichever plan you decide. It will be easier if you know which plan you want to go on before you call them, so you don't have to go through all that talk and deciding what makes the most sense for them. We could help by doing that first, and then ultimately you just have to get through and you have to try and be patient. I hate to say that, but there really is no other way if you want to go on to that plan. Now, on the other hand, if you are in a group plan, there's a variety of different things that have changed in that market as well. But if you were to lose coverage because your business is shut down, no fault of theirs, that would be what we call a qualifying event, loss of coverage, which would also allow you to come onto an individual plan, and then you could go through a broker and not have to call Access Health. However, there's also the other option that the insurance carriers, all of them, mostly because they're actually being kind, which is nice, they're allowing groups a lot more flexibility to keep people that are no longer, I'll just say, full-time employed anymore, mostly because their offices, depending on that industry, are shut down. They're allowing them to stay covered for most up to 60 days before they, in fact, have to come off the plan.
All right. We're speaking with Alan Sheketoff, an insurance broker, owner of MacMan Insurance Associates in Fairfield. Now, we've got to think, as a broker, your office is very busy. People get very upset with carriers in the state. Can you give us some indications of how much carriers are trying to be flexible to help during this chaotic time?
Well, some examples, like the one I just gave, it typically a group, a company who pays a premium, they may have several employees on it, but the bill would always come to the employer who pays the premium, and in many cases, the employees have to contribute to a plan, and it's usually done via payroll deduction while they're getting paid. The problem is if the business is out of business, like many restaurants are, obviously, they can't get paid, in which case the employee would have to pay their employer, but they are allowing them to stay on the plan in two different ways. They could stay on and still be considered active full-time employees, even though they're not working 30 hours a week. Some aren't working hardly at all, if at all. But they're allowing them to stay on the plan as if they're still working and everything's normal. The other option being they could also continue on the same plan they're on at the same rate, but it's called COBRA, which is a continuation of the exact same plan they were on. Typically, the difference being you only could do that for up to 30 months in Connecticut, and you would have to foot the entire bill unless the employer chooses to continue to be very nice and pay whatever portion of the bill they used to pay while everything was still normal. Some of the carriers have extended their grace period, as I said, to pay the premium up to 60 days. That just happened 2 days ago. So they realize with businesses now not generating any income in many cases, they don't want to lose not only their employees, but they certainly don't want to lose their insurance at such an uncertain time medically. So they are allowing them up through May 30th to pay for April's premium, which is something that they didn't have to do, but I believe it makes a lot of sense, and it's just the humane thing to do at this point when people, no fault of their own, are put in this position where they really didn't have a choice, and they're being told by the state they cannot go into work. So it's only fair that they should at least be allowed to keep their insurance. And all the carriers are trying to be creative. I mean, every single day, almost every single hour of the day, they come out with different ideas that they're floating by us to see if, in fact, it would make sense that they could try different things to try and help people. A lot, I believe, will change again after tomorrow, if and when Congress could ever get this bill passed finally and into law, where a lot of the employer groups and the employees are going to be paid a certain sum of money, and small employer businesses are going to be able to walk up to the local bank, get a loan instantaneously backed by the federal government, which will allow them to continue to pay all their overhead expenses, which would include salaries, rents, and everything else. And I think then the insurance carriers will work even more favorably because now they'll have the money to be able to pay premiums.
Yeah. Dad, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but just if you could give people your number and your address if they have questions about this. I know you guys are busy, but I'm sure other people have information they want from you. Where can they find you?
Number is 203-384-9000. And then you could hit either 101, 102, 103, which would be myself, Nicholas, or Derek, any of which could be able to help you. Emailing is probably easier, which would either be Alan, Derek, or Nicholas at MacManInsurance.com, which is also our website, MacManInsurance.com. And you could pretty much see a lot of information up there, which could be really helpful. Plus, all right, we're all over social media.
Awesome, Dad. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. That's my dad, Alan Shekhatov, who more importantly is an insurance broker right here in Fairfield, owner of Macman Insurance Associates, talking about getting insurance during this very chaotic time. We appreciate it, Dad. I'll talk to you after the show.
Tony and Melissa in the morning on WICC 600, sponsored by Selco Heating and Air Conditioning.
So yesterday I was at home, obviously, after we got out of work, and I was looking through Facebook, and all of a sudden this message popped up on my Facebook page, and it was from Alexis Harrison. She's actually one of three organizers for this new event called Social Distance Food Drive. So this is actually the third food drive that they're going to be hosting this weekend in Fairfield. And Alexis is actually joining us live on the air to talk about this. Like I said, this is the third social distancing food drive in Fairfield. Alexis Harrison, one of the three organizers behind the effort to help people who have lost their jobs or have poor health right now because of the COVID-19 outbreak. First of all, Alexis, we wanted to know, how do you even have a food drive and incorporate social distancing at the same time?
Great question. Obviously, safety and public safety is the utmost importance right now. Obviously, people need to be home. But we also have to remember, you know, food pantries, food banks are still operating and the demand is even higher. So what we're having people do is having like a drive-through almost, where people pull up and we either unload their trunk or we pull up a car, you know, fairly far away from their car. And the donors put the supplies in the car. So there's really no exchange. We keep very safe distances from one another. And we also keep volunteers to a minimum. We don't want, you know, a number of people congregating at one place. So we have, you know, 3 to 5 at most. In addition, we're all wearing gloves. We're all being, you know, just super careful.
Well, what exactly are you collecting and how is it being distributed? I mean, I would imagine it's like a regular food drive, non-perishable food items.
Yeah, exactly. But so we're actually partnering with Operation Hope, a food pantry in Fairfield that has served our community for several decades now. And their demand is so high right now, you know, due to job losses and other things, other factors. But this week we're asking people just for 5 items: canned stew and chili, boxed milk, jelly, and canned fruits. So just those staples. Prior weeks we've been, you know, collecting, you know, the whole gamut of, you know, cleaning supplies, you know, other staples. But these items are something that Operation Hope has requested.
So, and what I love about this, again, we're talking to Alexis Harrison. She is one of the co-organizers behind this social distancing food drive happening in Fairfield. What I love about this is it's kind of like a drive-through, like you said, and you are keeping people obviously safe, but people are able to still give back during this really difficult time. So where exactly is this located? How can people help? What are the hours, all the logistics?
Sure. It's Sunday from 10 to noon at First Church Congregational, which is right on Beach Road. Right near the Post Road in Fairfield. If people have questions, they can call me directly. My number is 203-556-2546. Because I will say, you know, we've done this now two times before, and people say, you know, I can't make it. You know, I still want to donate. So in some cases, people have just donated things to my house, and, you know, I bring them over to Operation Hope. People are really generous, and it's really been a groundswell of support from Operation Hope, from First Church Congregational in our town. We're pretty lucky.
How much have you guys collected so far? Just a guesstimate. How much have you guys been collecting?
Gosh, our first week, we put together this food drive in like 48 hours. We collected like over 60 bags.
Wow.
Last week, I can't even estimate. I just know the food pantry was in awe. Operation Hope just couldn't believe the amount of food that was now there. I mean, the shelves were, you know, fairly bare. You know, these times are rough, and, you know, people are not donating as much as they probably would during a regular time. So I think we're trying to narrow that divide of the lack of donations.
All right. And is there a website that folks can go to that they can read about all of this and get more information?
We're kind of, we just have a Facebook page, no website. It's Neighbors Helping Neighbors, Fairfield and Southport on Facebook. Or they can, you know, go directly to Operation Hope's website, or they can call me at 203-556-2546, and I'm happy to help people.
And Alexis, I know you said that there are specific items that you're collecting for this week, and you guys seem to be changing it up every single week. Any idea how long you guys will be doing this drive if people are not available this weekend to pop by? Do you guys think this will be, you know, you're going to be doing it for the long term, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think we're going to try to do this for the duration as long as it's safe, as long as we're not putting other people in jeopardy. I mean, the need is going to be there. We know just by the unemployment numbers, that the demand will be just higher and higher as the weeks go on, unfortunately. And, you know, we're here. This is Neighbors Helping Neighbors. We just want to be of help. We want to, you know, do something to give back to people. You know, people, you know, often think that they're forgotten, and we want people to know they are not forgotten during these hard times.
Yeah, and just remind people one more time, what are the items you're collecting on Sunday?
Sure. Canned stew and chili, boxed milk, jelly, and canned fruits. In addition, you know, gift cards to local grocery stores are also, you know, gratefully accepted. So if people want to give those, you know, we will accept them and give them on to the food pantry.
That's a nice thing that you guys are doing. Keep up the good work. We thank you so very much for taking a few minutes. Good luck with your project.
Great. Thanks, Tony. Thanks, Melissa.